I'm talking to Mr. Lawson now of Torquay, who's in the Royal Field Artillery, and he's going to tell us all about his war experiences.
Well, I joined the territory about 2 years before the war, and then, of course, I was called up on while I was sailing up on a little cruise to Holy Island, and we were told to turn back the town because they're closing the war had been declared and they were closing the harbour, so we made back in a raging head, you know, right against the wind, and we finally got in, and I got my papers were waiting for me at 2 o'clock in the morning. They rang bang on the door and I was told I had to report at the barracks the next day at noon, and the next night I was on my way up to Morpeth to fetch remounts back, and so that was the start of my life. We were at Gosforth Park in the race course. The grandstands had been boarded up and bunks put in. We lived there. That was our camp. And it was very nice there. And we were asked to volunteer for active service, which I did. And we left on the 5th of April, 1915. And I had a dog which I'd picked up, a stray dog I picked up when I was home on leave at Whitley Bay one evening, and it followed me and I took it home. Then I took it to the barracks and it became a regimental dog from the very first start. So it used to come on parade with the officers and the sergeant major, and used to walk around, follow him around on a horse's length behind on the exercises or any maneuver, and he was locked away in the major's loose box when I was taken off to Southampton to cross, and I'd given him up, you see, I'd said goodbye. But about 3 or 4 days at a French village called Caisre, I was cleaning my harness in the farmyard, and all of a sudden the bushes parted. And Mick, this is the dog. Over a hedge. And made a great fuss at me. And he took up his duty straight away as regimental dog. And I had him with me till we got on the Armentiers front. And he caught rabies. So the veterinary sergeant said, but I can't think it was. He got lockjaw anyway, and they had. He died. We buried him on the border of France and Belgium at a place called Pontignac. But 2 or 3 months afterwards, this is just a continuation of the dog story, we kidnapped another dog, the absolute double, and he became the regimental dog right up till I was demobilized, and the girl wrote to me from a city billet I was in, an unofficial one, and said that the dog had left to look for me, apparently. So that was the end of Mick number two. Well, now we'll get back to the war part. Well, we had a good crossing. I had to look after the horses down below, and it was a bit of a job. And I had a raving toothache. I developed a raving toothache. It kept any thoughts of seasickness away. So the first farm we came to, I asked for the village doctor. And he came along, stood me up against the wall in front of all the civvies gathered. And yanked the tooth out.
Wasn't that rather painful?
It was. Still, not as painful as the toothache was. So then we started off up to the line, and as we were going through Poperang, that's where Toc H was originated, our leading horse, they were shelling the town for the first time, and one of our leading team horses got killed, and we were brought to a standstill. The whole brigade was brought to a standstill. And till they got the horse cut away from it, and the spare one put in. Get down, I knew you were talking. And, we finally got to our first wagon line, and the batteries went into position at Ypres, the second battle of Ypres. I was left behind. I was a driver, you see, and I had to stay behind at the wagon line with the horses. Well, now I'll have to think of it all. We didn't have many casualties there, but I think one of our sergeants was killed. And
this must have been the first time that you ever came under fire.
Yes,
Mr.
well,
Lawson.
The first
How
time
did
was
it feel?
The first time was actually in Popperang, because the houses are shaking and the shells are crashing over the place. And our officer, his white face, galloping around, giving orders, and he was scared stiff. And, of course, everybody was naturally scared stiff, but still, we were curious as well. You know, it was a new sensation. We got over it all right, though, and...
Did you have any casualties at the time?
Yes, just there. One of our sergeants was killed at the gun position.
Did that upset you? Because this was
it does upset everybody. Everybody was hushed talking about it, you know. And we had a sergeant major, an ex-coal man, and he had a great abomination of litter, and I think he gave our position away by having a fitting party, picking matches up and round the guns. And I'm kind of forgetful now. Bambi, get back.
What did it, you know, your mum and dad think when you were called up?
It was a very tragic, because a fortnight before I left, or 3 weeks, my brother was in the Navy, and he was in a transformed passenger boat on patrol duty for submarines. Unfortunately, the submarine caught them first, and the boat was sunk about 2 o'clock in the morning, with only about 20 saved, and 250 were lost, including my brother. So that was a very bad start when they knew I was going in a few weeks' time. Of course, they were naturally upset, but they quite agreed that it was the right thing to do. And they kept up very well through the war, because I had a few leaves, a long time in between. And they stuck it very well. Father used to sing at the pub.
Lovely. Do tell me something about that.
He used to sing the Boys of the Old Brigade, you know. There's this opening tune for the concert in the evening at the pub. And he used to sing a lot of war songs, and I used to go and visit them all when I was on leave. And
I suppose you had plenty of free pints then, did you?
Yeah, well, I don't drink much. But it was funny, though. No sooner got on the station, off the train, "Hello, you... when are you going back?" The ticket collector, you know. That was what they all said every time I came on there. "When are you going back?"
I suppose you felt like kicking them in the teeth, didn't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. I made up my mind to enjoy that Licking War, and I did, in spite of all the hardships. I had good horses. I had one called Shakespeare. It was that tall. I was always the last one to get mounted. They used to hold the old battery up while we started off. Sergeant says, "Captain, come on, Lawson, you're always the last man mounted. Get the bloody horn."
You obviously had a love for horses.
Yes,
that's why
I had
you joined
a love for horses
before
yes.
the war.
And I kept my horses fit right to the very end. They were in beautiful condition. I don't know what happened to them, whether it be more, because they'd go into the butcher's shops, I expect. But I had some funny horses. One had a homing sense. And every time we left any position, like wagon line, to go to another town or another battlefront, first opportunity, he'd rear up and then, in spite of all protests, gallop right back to where he was tied up the last time. The captain got on that one day and did him the same way in front of everybody, to everybody's amusement. Took me right back to the wagon. I knew what was going to happen when he borrowed the horse. And he said, "I'll never ride that bloody horse again." But he didn't. He put it in the teens at the finish. It was an outrider, you see. I was an outrider, in fact. and they put it in the teams, and I didn't hear any more about it. I should say.
Now
call it Sadie.
These horses must be, have become part and parcel of your existence.
Yes, they were.
Did it upset you if any harm befell them?
Yes, one was wounded on the stifle, it was bleeding to death, and they couldn't do anything to it, I have to shoot it. It's very upsetting. And of course, our orders, and I've always kept it, even with dogs, animal comes first, because you never know when that animal will get you back out of danger. And the mules always did that, because I used to occasionally go up to the... And this was on the Somme front. I used to go up with the mules. It was too dangerous and too rough, too many shell holes for vehicles, for big vehicles to go along. And I had there was like a trap, a small trap, and I used to take the rations up to the gun position from the wagon line. And one day I had a horse pulling the wagon. It had a mouth of steel and it couldn't hold it back, and it galloped over a shell hole and snapped the axle right at Hellfire Corner, and a place where they used to shell continuously. Dead horses and broken vehicles all over the place. So I had to wait until somebody came along and picked me up. You see, one of our wagons bringing ammunition came along. But that was a different front. I'm getting a bit mixed up. But we used to go along with two mules and panniers over the backs with the shells in and walk along with them. And of course the mules are always trying to get back again to the wagon line. There's an awful job getting them up to the line. And as soon as they're unloaded, they're away back without any orders. And we're jolly glad to go with them. I didn't come under much small arm fire, only I had one tragic experience of one of our own anti-aircraft shrapnel bullets. I was riding exercising horses in the wagon line, the back position, and a chap called Gunner Groom, that's a funny name, and he was alongside me, and all of a sudden, with a dogfight above, with two planes, you know, and we were looking up at it, talking about it, and all of a sudden, he slumped on the horse's neck, unconscious. A bullet had dropped down and hit him right on the spot where you make a grease mark with your hat, you know, on your hat. And he was unconscious. They had to take him. I got him back to the camp, and they had to take him by barge to the nearest hospital. I wish it'd given my memory was better. I can't remember where we were then.
Not to worry. I said not to worry.
No. I think he'd recovered, but I'm not sure. But that was a big shock, because it could have been me instead of him. There's only that much between us, you see. And out of the line, on the rest then.
Tell me, what actually did you do then? You dragged your guns up by horses,
horses, yes.
And put them in position.
Then the horses galloped back the wagon.
I see.
Yeah.
And then you started your firing, did you?
Yes, then they started firing it. We had one captain who was a mad bloke, a chap called Captain Law. He used to stand on the gun to try and see where the shell had landed, you know. And I think he came through all right, because we were split up later. Our old brigade was taken over by the division, 50th Division, soon after we'd been in France. And we went out with Boer War 15-pounders. Pipsqueaks, but they were later replaced by 18-pounders, which were a very good gun. Used to deafen you if you ever went near them. Most, if you're in the gun position, you happened to walk past the gun that was firing, you know, of course they fire in the air, and it was more deafening than a heavier gun, a howitzers. And right. Marvellous, you see, you'd have a great circle of different caliber guns all firing at once, and the sound of shell fire, as soon as we got near the line, it never ceased till we came out the line at the end of the war. One continual row of whining shells and explosions, and it always knew when a shell was coming, because you hear the whine getting louder and louder, and of course then you got down to it. And I automatically got down every time I heard any noise when I got home. And But the worst part of all, everything, was the mud. The horses up to the bellies in mud, standing in the wagon lines, you know, they'd have a long rope stretched across the part of the camp, and the horses were all picketed to those, and they were standing right up to their bellies in mud. And if you could sometimes, on a rest, you'd find a camp where they'd made brick stables, and you were lucky, very lucky, if you found those brick stables to tie the horses to. But all right through the winter, my putties, trousers were caked with mud, soaking mud. Of course, it started mud fever, you know, some of the chaps got mud fever, it caused disease to the skin, and the horses too.
Were you ever short of fodder for the horses?
Well, no, that's one thing I was amazed at right through the war. We always got our rations up. We had jolly good bacon, jolly good, this was when we were out in the wagon, for a rest, you know, or the wagon lines, if it was quiet front, we'd get plenty of rations up. Now and again, of course, we're on emergency rations, bully beef. We ate a lot of bully beef. In fact, bully beef was so plentiful, the dugouts were paved with it. You know, and it's still there, I expect, buried. And well, I think of the price of it now.
What about the horse fodder, though? You always managed to
yes,
get hay and stuff.
Yes, I used to get hay and
them.
Corn up, yes.
Even on the front line?
Even on the front line, yes. Mm. Used to have a marvellous system. Mm. Of course, it may not have been the same with all batteries or... But they were a very good battery, a nice lot of chaps, nice lot of horses, and all good friends, and I lost a lot different times. What but that was part of the war.
What was your saddest moment of the war?
Saddest moment was when a dog died.
Was it really? Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was different. You see, you knew the men were getting killed, and you got used to it. It was terrible. We were at Armentières when the dog died, of course. The wagon lines were right back at a place called Fondignette, and the guns were in position at Armentières, and it was a pretty quiet front at that time.
What was your funniest moment? You must have had a funny moment.
Well, that was one of them, and the axle broke on the car. But
what actually was the drill of putting the ammunition in the gun and firing it? Can you tell me something about that?
Well, I'm a bit hazy on it now because I wasn't a gunner and I didn't do much of that, but they had about four or five chaps around the gun and they all had different operations to hand the ammunition, and other people were given the range, and I can't really give you any detail, because anybody hears these tapes thinks I'm a clock.
Oh, I'm
but
not.
It's so far a long back, time back.
But it must have been terribly hard work,
yes.
I thought.
And being a driver, we haven't time to take interest in gunnery, you see.
Mm. Well, what was your actual function then? Was it to take the ammunition, make sure that the guns had the ammunition?
Yes, and rations, of course.
And rations.
Yes. The horses had put the guns in position first of all, then they'd come back to the wagon line. Then different other horses would be taken to what they call GS wagons and take the ammunition up in the ammunition and rations up to the line.
Did you ever have to drag a gun back in a hurry because the enemy was advancing?
Oh yes, we're in the retreat. I was just thinking of a funny part now. I was just thinking how the enemy wasted ammunition. At one gun position, we were short of water. We had to drink the water out of the shell holes. And I was up the line that time. And I remember as I was popping along with petrol cans, you wash out petrol cans to get water, they followed me along with small shells. They must have got a clear range of me because the whiz-bang, sure they call them, but they followed me right along because I had to keep diving into shell holes for shelter, but I got the water back all right. And I've been beside bursting shells many times and shrapnels burst over, but fortunately St. Christopher was looking after me.
Did you never get wounded?
Never got wounded, no. The only time I was in hospital was with the bronchitis. They sent me right back to Cali. And had a good, nice little time there, but I lost my unit for a long, long time. Couldn't find it. They'd gone up the line and I was taken from pillar to post there till I eventually caught up with them again.
You must have seen some terrible sights. What would you say was the most ghastly that you ever saw?
Well, the bodies all over the place. Horses, funny enough, I've always had such a passion for animals. The horses upset me, I think, more than the body. And horses were then, you know, blown apart. Blood everywhere.
Did you ever have to shoot any horses?
Yes. The one that got the shrapnel caught, that one I told you about.
Did you have to do that yourself?
I didn't shoot it, no, the fire sergeant shot. See, we had a veterinary sergeant. Yes. He looked after all the shoes and anything with a horse. Of course, if a horse did temporary first aid with disinfectant and stuff, you know, washing the wounds down. But he used to do it all.
What was it like on leave behind the lines, if you ever had leave behind
the
lines?
My favourite place is a place called Bayeux, and Saint-Omer, you know, and Havrick.
What did you do when you
were Well, we used to just grounding. I remember one funny thing. That was, soon after we'd been in the line, we went out for a rest, and the lice were terrible when we used to sleep on the farms. The lice used to get into all the seams of his shirt, all the seams of the trousers, and they'd bite and gnaw and bite at you all the time. That was one of the worst parts of the war, and under the arms. So I got into a fresh pair of riding pants. No, what was that? We were going off to... Let me get my facts right. We were going to Bayeux, and I thought, well, I'll put I'll put some raw creosote on these seams of my trousers. And by the time I got to the cafe, we sat down in an English, so-called English cafe, and I even white tablecloths on, which was marvellous. Well, this bastard stuff started burning all my privates, you know, the perspiration that brought... And that was the funniest part of my life, but the most painful one, by chance.
I don't suppose you ever used creosote
again. I never used creosote again, no.
Now, what about your home leave? How long did you have to wait before you had your first
Well, the first one was about a year. Mm. About a year in between each leave. Mm. And it was only 7 or 8 days.
What did it feel like when you got the news
wonderful.
That you were on the way home?
Marvellous. Marvellous. Yeah. Just going to see the paymaster and draw some money. And I think they... made a mistake on my pay book. They didn't deduct enough off. I got quite a bonus from it. But it was wonderful coming into, you know, crossing the channel. I don't think I was ever seasick, but very near. And getting home. And
what was the first thing you did when you got home?
Well, I had a jolly good English meal, you know, proper meal. And a good sleep in a comfortable bed. And a good bath.
And then what did you do after that? Did you visit your friends?
Oh,
yes,
visit the friends, yes. And there was one thing that we had a very jovial padre. And as we were riding about, he was always singing. He was a jolly good tenor voice. And... he was always singing, how, the chorus of parted, how can I live without you, how can I let you go, do you know it at all, song, it's a well-known song, and I was fascinated with this, and I thought, well, I'm I could sing it a bit, but never thought seriously of it. So I said, that's the first thing I do. I'm going to buy that song, get a piano, and buy that song. Which I did. I bought a piano to make a gratuity and got a music master. I thought he'd try and teach me the piano, but I was too old and too set to do that. But anyway, so he gave me some music, singing lessons, and I've sung ever since. Piano's around the corner.
Oh,
never stopped singing since then.
Oh, you know, you told me earlier on about going home on leave and your father singing in the pub. Can you tell me something about the pub? What was it called? Can you remember the name?
Well, it was called... it's in Monk's Eaton.
Yeah.
In Whitley Bay, outside of the village, outside Whitley Bay. The Black Bull, I think it was called. Something Bull. But my memory's gone very bad now, at times.
And your father used to sing there every
night.
Yes,
it was like a club, you know, and a lot of cronies. He didn't go for the booze, he went for the conviviality of the company.
Mm. And what
he
happened?
He was very proud to take me along, you see. They made a very big fuss.
What happened on those evenings? Did your father get up and give a song and then one of his friends?
Yes, they'd all join in, you see, yes.
Yes.
Really, but that was
evening.
It. There's another one called Anchor, that was another one of his. A nautical song called Anchored. But the Boys of the Old Brigade was his standard chorus. And the Kerry Dance, an Irish tune, an Irish song. A jolly good tenor.
And what was the beer like? Pretty good beer, was it? It was a lot cheaper there.
Cheaper, yeah. But I've never been one for drink. Yeah. I drank French beer and wine. I like wine. But never, it's too much bulk in beer for me. I just like a short drink, you know.
How much a pint was beer then? Can you say off?
Foggish idea. About tuppence, I think.
Was it really?
Yeah.
And did you have sort of eats on the bar for you?
Oh, yes, cheese and stuff.
Cheese and that sort of thing, yeah.
Of course, rations, everything was rationed there.
Would there be other servicemen with you in the pub, you know?
Well, not from my lot, but there would be, yes, there would be, yes. But I'm very, very hazy now, 81.
I think you're doing very well. In other words, it was really a sort of club, was it, for your community?
Yes,
you
it's a very pleasant village, Nancy. Very nice people, very nice houses. And I believe my house was lifted in the Second War. I haven't been to see, but I think it was lifted right out with a bomb, a rare bomb that hit there. Mm. It's no longer there, just it's the site, you know.
Now, obviously your leave had to come to an end. How did you feel when you went back from leave?
Well, very upset, of course. Very, very upset. But more at leave, you know, people's... My mother and sister and father, them being upset, was the most upsetting part of it. The most hellish. When the gates closed at Aunt Victoria Station or somewhere down there.
How did it feel when, on returning from leave, you got back to your friends in frontline position again? I mean.
Oh, returning from leave?
Yes.
Well, more or less took up the same jobs again, you know.
Did you ever think that you would come out unscathed?
Well, yes, I did.
Why do you think that was? Had you a sort of inner belief, a sort of inner strength that would gave you this feeling, or...?
Yes, I must have, because I never feared not coming back when I was on leave. I never feared not coming back. Now, some people are full of horror whether they'd come back and some didn't come back, but I never had that faith of some sort, I suppose.
Mm. Was it a religious faith?
I'm not religious accepting. Yeah. I mean, I believe, of course, but I'm not what you call religious.
What was the closest shave you ever had You told me about the anti-aircraft bullet that you hit your friend. Did you have any closer shaves than that?
Oh, many times when I've had to jump in a shell hole and just miss a shell, and shrapnel and everything falling round. You'd see it hitting the ground all around and spread it, flattened out on the ground. Close shaves were... But we didn't have anything like the infantry had to put it with, attacking a machine gun or anything like that. I mean, the artillery were better off from that point of view. But of course we got all the big stuff, all the heavy stuff. They used to shell the wagon lines and the gun positions.
Now, you were on the Somme, your battery, wasn't
yes,
it? Now, did you take part in this pre-offensive shelling that I believe lasted for a week or 14 days, continuous firing?
Yes.